And here Paul starts to get into complicated stuff because he's saying we are made one with Christ. We're not Christ, and yet we are his body. We are not the one on the throne, and yet we are with him. He will always be the Lord. He will always be the one that we worship, and yet he so gives himself to us that we become one with him. Paul tells us then in the passage we just read from Ephesians 2, 1 to 10, how this came about, that we became one with him. He says early in that chapter, you were separate from God. He said you were dead in your transgressions. He's talking about the biblical definition of death. The biblical definition is separation from God. That's what death is, which on the surface doesn't sound so bad, but in reality is the horror of death in all of its fullness. We are made by God for relationship with God. We are made by God so that we become whole in relationship to him. We're made by God so that we have healthy relationships with each other, so that we learn how to become people who aren't busy trying to take care of ourselves all the time, but instead are learning how to give ourselves away. And in a world where people give themselves away to serve each other, that's heaven. There's a lot more that heaven will have to offer, but that's the essence of it. A people who are so free that they're not busy being selfish. They're so free that they can look at you and live their life for you and do it with joy, not with a sense of, oh man, I got to do this, but with a sense of wonder, a sense of freedom, recognizing that's what life's all about. Paul is talking literally in these verses, and yet to us they're like hyperbole. To us they're like going way beyond which could be true. He's saying, apart from God, we're dead. With God, we're made one with Christ and we're allowed to join him in everything he is. We're brought to a place of ruling along with him, with the biblical understanding that ruling is serving, ruling is caring, ruling is bringing out the best out of everyone else, which only also brings out the best in you. He's kind of talking a little bit about zombies. He's talking a little bit about the whole idea of the living dead. We think of them as something imaginary, mythical. There's a whole zombie movement. People like to dress up like zombies and they have zombie parties and they're out on the streets bumping into things. But the reality is, if we don't belong to God, yes, we exist. Yes, we do in this life still experience good things. But we're missing out on the way we were created. And for all of eternity to come, we miss out on what God has intended for us. But because of God's great love for us, who's rich in mercy, he made us alive with Christ. Even when we were dead, it is by grace you have been saved. So, some quick things about God's grace in this passage. First of all, God's grace saves us. He doesn't make us pay, and he doesn't ignore our sin. Instead, he pays for the selfishness which destroys every one of us from the inside out. He saves us from that. He pays for our sin in full because sin can't be ignored. We're responsible for who we are. What we do matters at every point in our life. If we choose to be self-centered, to let ourselves be the most important thing in everything we are, we find it doesn't give us joy. We find it doesn't give us freedom. It crushes us. Our hearts start to shrivel up. and we die. God hates sin because He loves people. He hates sin because He wants us to be free. We think of sin as something that's kind of neat. We wish we could have it. We want it. And our culture encourages us to have it. We have all kinds of things that something's called devilishly good. Man, that's wicked. We have all kinds of ways of expressing it, and we think to ourselves, if it's forbidden, it must be something I want and something I need. But the reality is, God doesn't forbid us anything because He wants to restrict us. All He's doing is pointing out where death is, where it resides. He wants us to find out where life is and live in it. He wants us to know where death exists and stay away from it. That's all He's doing. It is literally that simple. He's trying to give us life without overruling our responsibility for ourselves. So, stay away from evil. Yet, it's here. Yet, we all are responsible for it. We all do the things which are self-centered. And sin can't be ignored. It's a spiritual principle that's stronger than gravity. You can't ignore gravity. If you do, you die. You can try to find ways to work with other principles that can circumvent it, but it still doesn't change the fact that gravity's there. It is the same with God's Word. He tells us the things that kill, so stay away from them. The Ten Commandments that Daniel was talking about. He tells the things which give life, so run to them, because they do. He pays for our sin with the life of His own Son. Only He could do it. Only He was available. Only He met the requirements, because He did not live a life with sin. He did not live for Himself. He lived to serve. He lived to glorify the Father and to give Himself away. God's grace saves us. We get that. If you've been coming to church for quite a long time, that makes sense. But God's grace does more than simply save us. God's grace also enables us to become like Him. Selfishness is such deep-rooted stuff. It is in me. I'm always amazed at how so simply and easily I can slide into living for me, and how very difficult it is to stop that. The greatest problem in the world, out of all the huge problems that are here, famine, war, pollution, people's cruelty one to another, the greatest problem in the world is my own selfishness. It is that I live as if I'm the center of everything. And I'm not. Now, that's no surprise to you, because you know I'm not. But for whatever reason, I can't seem to get it through my head to the depths of my being to know that I'm not the center of everything. I so need miracles to take place so that I start to become free from being stuck in serving me, so that I start to lean on the goodness of God, and by His grace, I start to become like Him. He provides grace for that too. His grace, well, it's one of those things, you look at it, we're taught in our world, if it's too good to be true, it's probably not. If something being offered for free, yeah, what's the catch? We, with everything we do, we say, I accept that wonderful gift, but God isn't saying, I'll give this to you, but He's offering us wholeness, life, and freedom. It is ours for the taking, for the receiving. Wouldn't you love to have those things? Wouldn't you love just to be able to rip off a little piece of paper and take it and live in the wonder and the freedom that's there? Forgiveness, peace, strength to not be ruled by your selfishness, but a strength to simply do what you know is life-giving for people. And he does more. God's grace gives us purpose, and it carries us through life. God has a task for us. We are his handiwork, each one, amazing, miraculous, each one especially designed by God and prepared in advance for work to do. As you know, I do the service at the hospital every Sunday. I go from here to there. Most of the people there can only come to the service by wheelchair. We go around to the different rooms and we bring them down to the chapel where we have the worship service. A lot of them have had their lives turned upside down, ruined. Because of sickness, they've lost jobs. Sometimes because of sickness, they've lost relationships. They've lost control of their lives. People take them where they want to take them, not where they themselves want to go. Their lives are turned upside down, and many of them are thinking there's no hope left. Yet God has prepared them to be able to do things for his glory, things that can share life and freedom with other people in the rooms where they are, with the staff who are around them, and who knows what else, with the fact that God is powerful and great. The fact that prayer changes things. The fact that God's grace is poured on us all the time. His grace saves us. His grace enables us to become like him. And his grace also carries us through the events of life. Through the good ones, fortunately, his grace is there for us so that we can live with vitality and joy. But all of us in this life face things that are hard. All of us, sooner or later, sometimes more often than not, face things that crush us. And God has grace for us in the midst of those because he's designed us to live with purpose. He wants every single person to know that they are created by him and they have tasks to do. Even the ones who are at the end of life, even the ones who feel like there is nothing else to do except go home. Every single person has purpose because of who God is and because his grace is available for us. So, this is a simple message. We're saved by God's grace based on the work that Jesus has done for us. God's grace enables us to become like him. God's grace gives us purpose and carries us through everything we face in life. Now, the wonder of grace is that it doesn't work the way we naturally think it should. We tell ourselves, if I'm not walking with God, if I'm not doing the things I should be doing, and I don't, then I need to try harder. That's the solution. That's what I need to be able to get back to the place where I should be. Try harder. Just work harder. Just do it. Everybody knows, just do it. But this is a whole different system. We're saved by grace. No, save yourself. Work hard. Do it. You can't. What you're being given is priceless. It can't be purchased. It can't be earned. It can only be done by the work of Jesus and given to you. Okay, got that. Saved by grace. Now, work. Work at it. Get better. Be a better person. Clean your act up. It doesn't work like that. It's grace that saves you. But it's also grace that enables you to become Christ-like. Now, here's a tough part of it. Because you're saying in your heads, I'm sure, if grace is like that, that means I can abuse it. If grace is like that, then I'll just accept grace and I'll go ahead and be a jerk. I'll just live my life like an idiot. If you think grace can be abused, you're on the right track. It is grace. It is given because of the goodness of God, because He loves us. It can't be abused because it's grace that invites us into freedom. And if you're not living in freedom, you're not free. It's that simple. If you are addicted to anything that's ruining your life and you don't want to let go, you want to stay there stuck, then you're not living in the grace that God gives. The grace that God gives you, first of all, just that little bit of a nudge to say, I want to be free. I don't want to be stuck here anymore. God, help me. That cry, God, help me, is by God's grace. And that cry, God, help me, God will never ignore. He'll answer it. As you cry, God, help me, He gives you more grace. God, I need more. I'm still stuck. Help me through this. And then you watch to see the miracles that God brings to help to bring you to a place of freedom. Remember, righteousness is life. It's not drudgery. It's not restriction. It's stepping outside restriction to start to live life to the full. It is about trust and simple obedience by faith, relying on God's grace. So, where do you need more grace in your life? What comes to mind? Do you need more grace to know that God truly loves you? Can you hear the whisper of God within the depths of your heart? I love you. By name, I love you. Do you hear Him say your name? If you hear it, you're right. And if you don't hear it, you're missing it. Because He does. Do you need more grace to grow in His character? Well, all of us do. Do you need more grace to live what He has created you and called you to do? Do you need more grace in dealing with a tough situation? Anybody here in a tough situation? There should be about 100% head nods. Do you need more grace in breaking a habit? Do you need more grace for healing in relationships? Do you need more grace to let go of past wounds or of grief or of failures? I don't know what it's like inside your head. I only know what it's like inside mine. But I'm amazed at how many dumb things I've done in life. And I'm amazed at the keenness of my memory in being able to remember those dumb things. Some of them are trivial. Some of them were neglectful. Some of them were things I did intentionally. I'm so dumb. Need grace. Do you need grace for forgiving those who've hurt you? Do you need grace to accept forgiveness? Do you need grace to have the strength to do the right thing? How do you get more grace? Same way you got saved. You ask for it. No, come on, it's got to be tougher than that. Well, it is tougher because of the fact that you have to live. But the receiving of grace is not. It's not tougher at all. We have the privilege through Jesus of being able to call out to God for His help. so that we can receive grace in our time of need. So, what do you need? Where would you like to have His grace pouring into your life? It's got to be tougher than that, doesn't it? It's not. He loves you. He's not saying, I love you, but He is saying, I love you. You can't exhaust His supply of grace. You can draw on it and get better at drawing on it. And draw on it again and again and again, but you can't exhaust it. You simply cannot do it. Let's pray together. Father, I want to ask...